Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
I thought our puck management in the second period was terrible. You know we, they were going to press. We played too much one-on-one hockey. And every time we played one-on-one hockey or we, you know, you turn it over around the top of the circle, you're basically breaking them out. And, you know, we did that probably four or five times in the second period. That really hurt us. And then I think at the end of the night, we just weren't strong enough around our net. You look at some of the goals. You got to be stronger than that.
No need to let it linger. The Sabres are right back at it in Columbus tonight, which is the good news. Marty, Lindy Ruff said earlier this year, you're not going to win scoring just one goal. Well, they have joined a four-team club now that did not win when scoring five. Can you name the other three teams that have lost, none of them in regulation, I might add, all of them in overtime, when scoring five or more?
LA is easy because they lost 8-7.
Recency bias.
Bias right there. I'm going to say Windy Florida Panthers?
Nope.
No, they didn't get there. No, I don't know the other two.
The Rangers, 6-5 overtime loss to Utah.
Yeah, I thought it was 5-4, so I'm like, they didn't get there, but it was 6-5,
and
you're right.
And the stunning Vancouver 6-5 loss to Calgary on opening night when they rallied late to tie, only to lose in an overtime. So it happens. It's early in the year, and it's already happened four times, the team. So that's quite a bit, I think. Like, it just, so the moral of the story is, whether you score one or five, there's still much more
part
to the game that you have to control. And may I call to the witness stand, Martin Byron, Mr. Byron, this is your one and only opportunity before this court. Would you like to retract your statement about Evgeny Malkin not playing well?
No, I know. Seriously, you made me look bad and Crosby, but I guess I should know that because whenever I'm involved in a game with Malkin and Crosby, they perform. I wasn't even involved in
even
the
as an
yesterday.
Analyst, yes.
But
look
I'm
at
not
you.
Even working last night. It's a TNT game and they still played, you know, their, you know what, off. If it hadn't been for those two, that game's over. Like, listen.
For sure.
There's no way. Like Carlson, that was awful. Letang was not good. Nobody was good. I get Puljujärvi gets a goal.
The Eller line I thought was fine as
Eller
it had been against
was
Montreal.
Good. Yep. Exactly. Yep. They were good tonight, the game before. So, but I mean, Crosby, Malkin, Crosby, it was them putting their team on their back. And I did like the start of the Sabres because my Instagram pregame basically said, the weakness of the Pittsburgh Penguins is their defense. Get to their defense and get there often and work them down low. I know the Sabres are a bit more of a rush team. They've always been. And Lindy Ruff's going to try to change that a little bit. Talked to Shayna Goldman about that last week, about how teams have not gone away from their identity of being good on the rush, like Colorado or Tampa or Florida. But it's add an aspect of, you know what? If you're going to play a team that has a tough time on the back end, put pressure on them. So off the opening faceoff, put pressure on the D. Boom, turnover by Jarry, you score. Put pressure on Carlson after that. It was a weird play off the wall by Zucker, but Greenway gets there. Boom, it's 2-0. You're like, hey, you're putting pressure. You're putting pressure on the D at creating a 2-on-1 for Peterka goal. Okay, so why are you playing high in the zone, in the offensive zone, and turning the puck over? And I get Lindy Ruff said a few things, and we just heard him saying puck management, right, and being tough in front of your net. Isn't that what last year and 2 years ago was all about, like the puck management and the lack of standing your ground in front of your own goalie? That was all about. And now I think it came very angry in Lindy's voice, in my opinion, in the way that he addressed that. He didn't want to single anybody out, but he was probably about a feather in his lap away from singling people out when he commented last night. That's what it was about. That was a tough a tough way to go in the second period. And we can all watch the game. We can all go to the highlights. And we all know that, you know, the power play turnover by Cousins and Quinn after that that made it 3-2 and 3-3 or 3-3 are two of the moments that Lindy's referring to. You don't have to be, you know, a Nobel Prize winner in hockey to know that. It's right there and you can see it.
How long is that list?
Nobel Prize winner?
In hockey, yes.
Of hockey?
Have we had any?
Not so long. I think most of them, I would say, are the ones that get voted into the Hall of Fame as...
Builders?
The reporters and the writing contribution. Those are the ones that could win that.
The Foster Hewitt and Elmer Ferguson.
Foster Hewitt and Elmer, yes.
Yes, yeah.
Those would be the one I'd vote for.
Well, Malkin has 11 points over the last four, has 11 in five for the season. He's leading the NHL in scoring. I thought it was a terribly rude tribute by Crosby to Michael Mersch by scoring from his knee for the overtime winner. So, you know, no need for Sid to acknowledge Michael's
retirement. Sid did it before Mersch, but Mersch.
I know. I know.
Here, I get that.
It was all too familiar, wasn't it? Like that's and I'd be curious to know how you think, knowing that Crosby has done this over and over and over to the tune of 1,600 points plus now, how do you defend in the 4-on-3 so that Crosby is not in that position to be the difference maker? And like, because people are going to casually ask that, but there has to be a technical component to this when you're playing 4-on-3 that makes it way more challenging than what it might appear.
Two things is your three guys have to not allow any low play. If they want to go back to the top of the zone, go back to the top of the zone. But I believe it was Clifton who was on the right side as a defenseman. And when he knows that the passing lane to the back door it could be there for Crosby, you have to put a knee down, stick down. Like, okay, go back up top, right, Carlson? Like, we're not going to give you that pass to Crosby on the back door. And at the end of the night, it may not have looked like it, but according to Money Puck, according to Sports Logic, the expected goals were around 6 for Pittsburgh and around 2.5 to 3 for Buffalo. So you think of Luukkonen giving up 6 goals in the game, and you're thinking, well, you know what? Like, you got to get better goaltending, and I get it. There's moments where I would probably suggest the same things, but when you give up an expected goals that's a 6 number, you didn't do a lot of defending in front of them. And so that's part of it. Now, is it on Clifton? No. I mean, that's a good pass, but you just got to be a step ahead. Like, you got to play chess, not checkers. You got to know that, hey, I'm not going to give Crosby or Malkin anything down low. Go back to Letang. We'll take that at the top of the zone, but we're not going to give anything down low.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's pick your poison, because historically, you will find that both Letang and Crosby, and obviously the other two components on the ice, have had pronounced impacts in overtime over the course of their careers. So, was it a penalty on Thompson? Yes, in my opinion, it was a penalty. I think Tage acknowledged it too, although he is right in saying that it happens pretty much once a shift every time. And it does, because most board battles involve a little bit of contact where, obviously, as an aggressor, you're trying to prevent an opponent from doing something, but just like in other sports, you don't call it every single time, and it's way more wide open when it's 4-on-3. But the only thing that annoyed me, which I told you before the show, was 1:50 left in the game. Penguins dump it into the Sabres zone. Zucker goes to play it out, and he gets tripped on the Malkin entry right in front of the ref. And I'm just like, these are very similar plays here. So anyway, that's
I get that. And it
Tage would finish his statement last night by saying, we did it to ourselves. So agreed. Let them agree on that and let them try to make it a 3-game point streak with a good performance in Columbus tonight.
Well, yeah, but before we get to Columbus, the part of the game that bugged me last night, okay, and I get the Sabres allowed Pittsburgh to come back. We've talked about the power play, and the Sabres are now still 0-for. They take a penalty on their power play. They give up a shorthanded goal. Like, those are part of the game that bugged me. But in the middle of the second period, right? Paterka chance on a breakaway goes off the post. You're like, hey, that could have been a 4-1 game right there. You get a power play. So, you know, you you end up on the power play, then Zucker takes the penalty, then Grizzly gets called on Tuck for, it wasn't a penalty, like it's Grizzly 4-on-4 stepping up on Tuck, making a body check. Tuck never saw Grizzly was there, and, you know, goes down, they call it tripping. So you're 4-on-3. You've already kind of shot yourself in the foot by taking a penalty on the power play, but you got a gift of, hey, you know what? We're going to give you a 4-on-3 here. Mm-hmm. And then you go and give that shorthanded goal, which was the Cousins turnover. The Sabres challenge for offside. And first look, I thought it was offside.
Agreed. When it was happening live, I was like, oh, that was offside.
That was offside. Like, why wouldn't you drag your foot, right? Like, exactly. I mean, 2-on-1. Just for that, I would have called it offside. Like, seriously, do better. But that's that. Then the challenge, the call comes back that the goal stands. Now, the NHL, and offer, we are lucky to get the NHL's emails when there's a rule, stated that the call was inconclusive. Basically, not that the play was onside or right, that we have confirmation that it was. The call was inconclusive because I believe when TNT, the last frame, when they stopped the puck on the blue line before it fully crossed, like it was really close to see, correct, like, is the skate on and over the blue line or not? So they called it inconclusive. Look, I don't mind them challenging there. I don't mind them. You know what? It made it 3-2. O'Connor scores. Like, okay, it made it 3-2. You're still in control of the game. And then you allow Puljujarvi to score his breakaway goal because of another turnover. That was the game right there. In a matter of 4 minutes, I felt like the game went from you're in control up 3-1 to now you're 3-3 and scrambling.
But, you know, it settled in after that. Eventually they fell behind, but then immediately roared back with 2 goals in 40 seconds in the third period, which I think it's fair to say was unexpected at that point based on how the game had been trending against them. Yep. And so good for them. It's just, in the end, so many non-5-on-5 situations were not good for Buffalo last night. They allowed 2 power play goals, a shorthanded goal, and a 6-on-5 goal at the end, which I think when Lindy Ruff said we didn't handle the pressure well and we were passive inside of our zone, I think at the end of the game, the 6-on-5, I get it. Well, first of all, that is the pressure situation. So that's you can't get more pressure than time running out, their best players out there, figure it out. But that sequence lasted almost 2 minutes without a whistle.
Yeah.
Buffalo very rarely came close to possessing the puck with authority and certainly not within their own zone. Were they aggressive enough to get it into an actual 50-50 battle? And that allowed for the eventual move around. And I mean, look.
But it's the same thing.
Like, I don't even know how
you make little mistakes, right? You make little mistakes as sometimes you're too passive. Sometimes you're too aggressive. I would always kind of venture on the aggressive side of it. And the first goal of the game for Pittsburgh was Tuck was very aggressive in the neutral zone, almost got a 2-on-1 just to get it stripped by Crosby, who's really good at it. And then they come back and they score. I'm like, somebody, because I mentioned how I like Tuck's game in the first period on X, somebody says, yeah, but he lost the puck on the first Pittsburgh goal. I'm like, yeah, but he lost it being too aggressive. I'll take the too aggressive nature as opposed to the passive nature. That's one of the things. Just like the Pittsburgh Penguins dumped the puck in at 5-4 at the end of the game, and it was going to be an icing, and Luukkonen goes out to play the puck. Am I going to blame Luukkonen for playing the puck and negating the icing? No, he made a call, an aggressive call of saying, you know what, the way that I can help, not knowing it was going to be icing because Carlson was close to the red line, and he has to go out right away. But he stopped the puck and gave it to his defenseman, and nothing happened. Mm-hmm. That's where the passive happened, not Luukkonen going out to play the puck, which you make mistakes, but I can tell you this, everybody's got to help each other out. You make a call on the play, but there was no like, oh, we're going to, if we have to ice it, we'll ice it. If we have to, like, I was going to text our group, empty netters are for winners, because I'm like, they're going for an empty net. But there was never a chance, never a time that they were aggressive enough to say, hey, they were able to get the puck back and we're going to score an empty net.
So what did you think of the tying goal then, that Malkin has the shot, the heavy shot, and then the rebound just lay in the crease?
Well, I mean, I know Lindy mentioned we got to be tougher around our net, and I get that. And maybe on that play, you're singling it Owen Power, because Power is with Raquel. But I think if Power grabs Raquel and throws him down on the ice, Brian Rust is right there to put the puck in the net. I think you got to have help. And one of the things that after the two games in Europe, Lindy Ruff says, I'm still evaluating this team. Right now, the penalty kill is giving up 5 goals on 18 power play attempts, right? So you're at 72%. Who are your penalty killers? Who are your guys that you can say, hey, you know what? We are going to go out there and defend and be hard to play against when we kill penalties? I don't think he's figured that out yet. I don't think anybody has stepped up and say, hey, I want to be that guy. I want to be that guy. It's 5-4-18 on the power play against the Sabres. And 6-on-5, I know you had Greenway, McLeod, Zucker out there with Dahlin and Power, but that didn't show me that this is the group that should go out there and close out games. Right. It didn't. Not in that situation. Mm-hmm. And so I'm having a hard time right now trying to say, does Lindy have those guys right now at his availability, or does he have to try something else, right? Benson killing a penalty. I think he's trying Zach Benson killing a penalty. I don't know that Benson should be in that role, or he hasn't shown me that, hey, he's going to be a successful penalty killer. So there's a lot of question marks still yet to be answered. I trust that Lindy will find some answers, but right now those are the moments where do you have the horses to get that done on the PK or in situations late in games?
Well, they have to, and you're right. They maybe just haven't found it yet. So someone in that roster right now, many, as a matter of fact, will be counted on to be better in penalty kill and closeout situations here. And it just hasn't happened yet. It's the annoyance of last night. And again, like, you have to understand, and I mean, how many weeks are into the season are we? A couple weeks? Like, literally, like, you're tired of hearing us talk about 2-goal leads that disappear. Just accept it. It's going to happen. I was thrilled that they scored twice in 40 seconds in the third period. This game had, was it hallmarks, earmarks? I can't remember. Of like what, of years gone by, right? And when you've watched enough hockey, you sense a familiarity, especially with Pittsburgh and the numbers that Malkin and Crosby have posted against not only Buffalo, but everybody in the course of their careers. So I was pleasantly surprised by that impressive 2-40, snap it right back in your favor with a great opportunity, because I still thought if they had just a little bit more of that aggression, handled pressure, whatever, in the final 2 minutes, they could have easily escaped that with a win in Pittsburgh. Look, this is a Pittsburgh team that got blown out in their first game of the season on home ice, had a good road trip, came home, still got a terrible performance from Tristan Jarry, basically gets jeered off the ice, and the Sabres found themselves in a position to win this thing late, and they didn't. It's frustrating to me because at the end of last night, the standings should have read Buffalo 2-3, Pittsburgh 2-3. Yep. Instead, it's Buffalo 1-3-1, and the Penguins are now above 500. And I get it. We're 5 games in. But you got to win these, like, you know what I mean? So it's neither here nor there.
Okay, so, but again, it goes back to, you mentioned the 2 goals in 40 seconds. How simple and how aggressive were those 2 plays? Like, the puck is in your defensive zone. You're not looking to make a D-to-D pass. You're not looking to turn it behind the net. It's a hard play off the wall. It goes off of Pittsburgh Penguins player, and Peterka is chasing it down. Like, JJ had a fantastic game. Yes. I thought it took him a while. Look, he scored, make it 3-1. That was a great play by Byram to him. But he was fantastic, and that is going to be a huge help for the Sabres. But the approach of puck management is not just inside the offensive zone. It's how you play in the defensive zone. And if I'm Lindy Ruff today and I'm showing video, I'm like, I'm going to shoot it as hard as I can, And whatever happens is going to happen because it's not going to be in my defensive zone. The puck's not going to stay here. I'm not going to feather a little pass here. I'm not going to touch play there. There's moments for that, but know the situation of the game, and I'm not going to just make an easy play. And there was many other situations where it wasn't turnovers inside the offensive zone blue line. It was soft plays around the ice that I think hard plays were made, and hard plays gave you results.
Mm-hmm. Lindy won't be speaking to the media today until close to 5 p.m. Obviously, Sabres pregame coverage at 6:30 tonight. Remind me to make a special announcement about the pregame later, like I teased yesterday, and we're still teasing it. Anyway, so we won't know lineup changes officially until then.
Yeah.
These are really tough situations, I think, for a coach early in a year when you've got extra bodies and you're trying to be fair to players who are trying to work their way back up to top level. You're trying to be fair to the guys that are playing well and show that, you know, I'm going to do my best to give you the best players to work with in this situation. Mm-hmm. But when you have kind of the number of players, and again, it's five games, that haven't hit their stride yet, I think it makes it very challenging for a coach to pick one or pick two. Because remember, I kept quizzing you on this in those first two games in Prague. Like, if the coaching staff is going to make changes here, do you think they're going to tweak the defense pairs or do you think they're going to tweak the forward lines, right? Like, I kept pushing you on that, in which area. And there's no easy answer to this. The easiest answer is obvious. Devin Levi is going to presumably start tonight because that's the plan, right?
That's a given. But
beyond that, it is challenging, you know? Like, Peterka, obviously, just keep going with Thompson and Tuck and hope that... And I think this goes back to what you were saying about the expected goals for from the different analytics providers last night. The Sabres are still getting rush chances and one-off chances, but boy, it would be great to see Peterka, Thompson, Tuck just have those 45-second dominant shifts, right? Where you almost automatically draw a penalty. They only had the one power play last night, you know?
Well, technically, another thing. They should have had two.
Right.
Let me explain. Pittsburgh takes a penalty. The Sabres, a little bit later, take a penalty, so it's 4-on-4. Pittsburgh takes another penalty, but because the Sabres missed on the challenge, that second Pittsburgh penalty never had any power play time assessed to that penalty. It was still on the first one. So despite the fact that they got two different power play, a 5-on-4 and a 4-on-3, it was technically still on the first Pittsburgh power play penalty. So that's why, which is, I'm counting it as 0-for-2 because you had two different opportunities to score and you didn't do it. You asked me yesterday, what do you think? You know, Pittsburgh on Wednesday, Columbus on Thursday, you know, Yuri Kulik did not play last night.
Right.
Because we weren't sure. Benson was available. Peterka was available. And we had the conversation. Well, who comes out? And I said, you know what? I could see maybe Kulik playing on the fourth line with Krebs and Malenstein and not have Lafferty in because Lafferty didn't play the game before. Mm-hmm. You know, but I can also see Lindy making some changes in Columbus, regardless of the Pittsburgh result, because you've had guys that have either underperformed or guys that have had to deal with some injuries. So we talked about it yesterday. I said, so if Yuri Kulik doesn't play in Pittsburgh, I think he plays in Columbus. I mean, we'll see tonight when the lineups all come out, but that is a lot of coaches do that now. They look at the back-to-back situation and they want to insert fresh legs on the second game, like one pair of legs is probably not going to have that much of an effect on things, but they want to do that.
The Cousins line obviously is going to be garnering the most attention right now as one that could have potential change, right? Because of the lack of results. And it's unfortunate because it was probably the line that people were most excited about, in the sense of bounce back for Dylan. He's mature enough. He has his role on this team. It's very clear. And he's going to have guys like Benson, a healthy Quinn, Kulik, you know, like that line, I think for a lot of people was like, as long as this line is humming, you know, it's going to provide that proper transition of balance, transition of offensive power, if you will, because clearly the bottom six, although this is another frustration of last night, when you get multiple goals from the bottom six, you best win the game.
Yeah.
Right? And it didn't happen. So
that, and that line, McLeod, Greenway, and Zucker were on the ice for a lot of the chances that Pittsburgh were able to create. And I mentioned, Mike Sullivan was my assistant coach when I was with the Rangers. And when we played the Pittsburgh Penguins of Bylsma, he used to always hate the fact that he's like, Pittsburgh, they do it. Like, they'll send Crosby and Malkin against your third and fourth line all the time to get back in the game. Well, Mike Sullivan, the coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins now, does the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. It's probably not a coach's thing. It's probably a Crosby and Malkin thing saying, hey, coach, get us back out there against the third and fourth line, and we're going to create and get ourselves back into momentum. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the Crosby and Malkin on the ice against the McLeod line created a ton of chances. But you're right. You get a McLeod goal and a Greenway goal, you're hoping to win that game.
Yes. Well, put a much greater emphasis on tonight's game, which is in Columbus, coming up with Jordan LaBarber from Sabres.com. And we really want you to join us on October 26th. It's a 1 p.m. game for Hockey Halloween. Wear your spookiest costume. Marty's already prepping for this. Yes. Celebrate Halloween with the Sabres. The Wings are in town. First 5,000 fans will receive a wearable goat head themed flag. And there will be a trick-or-treat trail available for the first 1,000 fans in attendance in the concourse. Do we like get early trails? Access to that?
Like happy trails?
As part of
like,
our pregame?
Like I want to do the trail.
Actually, it would be great if they sent us on a trail and we all ended up in various parts of the arena, perhaps locked in, unable to even do the pregame show
on
that
a quest,
day.
On a quest would be great. Isn't, pardon the interruption, they do happy trails at the end of the show? Like, I feel like that's what this is. This is happy trail trick or treat.
Okay, visit sabres.com/tickets today. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back. It's Sabres Live. Sabres will be live tonight on MSG and WGR Sports Radio 550 against Columbus. Game two of the road trip tonight. Jordan LaBarber from Sabres.com is with us, which is a nice feeling for me because I thought you had like blocked me. It feels like forever since we've talked. So welcome back. Thank you for making me feel worthy once again. Your takeaway so far, let's do a five-game segment. Marty loves the segments. Mm-hmm. What have you seen in the five games, regardless of records and stats and whatever, whatever? Honestly, Jordan, you've been around this team as much or more than anyone based on your travels overseas and now travels again here on this three-game trip.
Well, I think you see a team that's getting used to a new identity. You do have a new coach, and with that comes, I don't know if I want to say growing pains, but, you know, you've heard a lot about we want to be harder to play against. We want to be more physical. And you see that manifest itself in the numbers and even the eye test. I mean, the team is, they're up towards the top of the league in hits, but playing more physically in the defensive zone, trying to get out quicker has been maybe the number one thing Lindy Ruff has been preaching all year, is using physicality to kill plays quicker and break out and go north. But also, you know, on the forecheck and through the neutral zone. But with that, you know, you're still looking for that consistency. You know, this is a team that has scored in the past. I think that, you know, even though it wasn't as prominent last year, still ended up 10th in the league in goals, I think, and toward the top of the league the year before. So you're starting trying to see that more consistently. They have scored more the last two games. And obviously the one area that's going to have to be more consistent is the power play. It was an area last year that probably was the biggest reason for the drop off in scoring. And you see them do different things personnel wise. They've had different, there have been some power plays that have looked really great where they've been set up and they've had chances. I don't think that was the case very much last night. Obviously entries is still a thing they're going to keep working on. Trying to get set up in the zone and maybe just putting the puck deep when the opportunity presents itself, when there isn't the chance to just cross over the blue line.
So, Jordan, what we're seeing is that they scored 5 against Pittsburgh. They scored 5 against Florida. They probably could have scored 5 against LA, right? Mm-hmm. So that identity of the team being able to score goals seems to be there. The identity of the puck management, and Lindy mentioned the puck management yesterday. I don't think bad puck management goes with, oh, we're taking chances to score goals. Mm-hmm. You score goals when you manage the puck well. And the experiences may take a little bit of time. Do you think Lindy, in his post-game conference last night, sounds like he has patience for that, or lack of patience is going to be the term when it comes to puck management?
I don't want to say lack of patience, because I think he understands that it's, you know, it's a process. However, definitely, I don't think there's an abundance of patience, not just from him, but from the players themselves. I think they have very high expectations, and Lindy speaks very matter-of-factly. I'm sure he does to them. He does to the media. He said yesterday, you know, our puck management in the second period was terrible. Mm-hmm. But you heard that from the players too. You know, Tage Thompson was pretty, you know, blunt in his assessment. You know, they had good stretches yesterday, and they had very bad stretches yesterday, and it all had to do with puck management and making the right decisions and not allowing Pittsburgh to come back in that case with grade A chances on the rush, which you saw the first period was pretty dominant. The Sabres looked, I thought, a lot faster than Pittsburgh in the first period, and then the second period maybe giving the Penguins opportunities to look offensive because of turnovers, I think, you know, maybe was a difference. So the answer being probably not a lot of patience from anyone, because they have high expectations and they are aware of the mistakes that cost them yesterday.
Who do you think can get through this period of challenging times statistically from a personal standpoint, Rasmus Dahlin or Dylan Cousins or both? Like, how do you view how they're both handling this situation, where obviously based on their leadership expectations, both external and internal, would like to be having bigger impacts on these games? How do you see them handling this?
Yeah, it's those two guys. You know, I can tell you from being around the team, it's not a lack of effort, and it's not a lack of compete, and it's not a lack of caring. So I expect a lot from both of those guys, because I think they expect a lot from themselves. We've seen that from them before. It has been a slow start statistically. I thought, you know, Dylan, the first couple of games really stood out the way he played, maybe overseas. Rasmus is on the ice in every situation. The points will come if he's just himself. Like, that's a given, especially if the power play takes off and he's, you know, the one quarterbacking up there. And it was a season of high expectations for Dylan. he talked about it. You know, Kevin Adams and the off talked about set the high ceiling that we all know he has. A two-way center who can really control a game. And they said, just be yourself, play your game, let the points follow. So I think that's probably the mandate still. Be good in all areas and points will follow. Yeah, he had chances even in the past week.
Yeah, he did have chances. And, you know, that's what it is right now when it comes to the Sabres creating chances. But it's the other side of things that they have to be able to manage better, especially after last night. They're in Columbus tonight, 7 o'clock puck drop. We're on the air at 6:30 for the pregame. Kind of a weird week in Columbus because they had their home opener against the Florida Panthers on Tuesday. But it wasn't a typical home opener. It was more of a celebration of life of Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau. Tonight, they're doing a pregame home opening ceremony type of thing. Columbus, I mean, they can score. They scored six against Colorado. They scored, three against Florida, and it was a tight battle. Like, I think they've got surprising good forwards. It's something that the Sabres will have to watch for, but what do you expect out of this group on the, the second back-to-back of the year, really?
Yeah. Columbus, they're dealing with injuries, quite a bit, actually. Obviously Boone Jenner is out for a while. A lot of these young forwards we saw in the head-to-head games last year, they have the ability to cause problems and score. Marchenko had the hat trick last year. Chinnikov is also on that line with Monahan. He's off to a great start. I think he's got five assists already. And Fantilli had, he's the top of the draft guy, and he had some success against the Sabres. Even the goalie, I think Tarasov's in that tonight. He had one of those games against the Sabres last year.
Two
of them.
Yeah, he played in all three. Of course, he was a pedestrian in the Columbus 9-4 win over Buffalo. He didn't have to do much.
Yeah.
But the next two games, he's the reason they got to overtime before the Sabres won. He stopped 39 of 42. And then in the next meeting, which he also lost, he stopped 35 of 37. So I don't know who's got the advantage here. Buffalo certainly knows because they've seen him three times now, Tarasov in goal.
Yeah. And the point being, there's a lot of they've got a lot of young guys who are capable, and they've got a lot of reason to play right now. I'm sure.
Yeah.
It was an emotional night the other night. I'm sure that emotion is going to spill into the rest of the season, I would imagine. And it'll probably be a lot of perspective too, walking the other night, seeing that banner. Just on a human level, how could you not? So that's what I'm expecting. Probably more emotion and probably a highly motivated Columbus team.
We expect Levi to start tonight, back to back, right? And they've been rotating. I've liked what I've seen out of Levi. Not saying that, I've not liked some of the things that I've seen out of Luukkonen. Unfortunately, Lukanen's 0-2-1, right? And that's at the end of the day, you want to win. But you're around. Like, what's Levi's demeanor different from this year being around the team at the start of the year to last year, like on the plane, at the hotel, and everything?
Yeah, not a huge difference to me, honestly, in the sense that he's always just been very much himself, very confident. I will say he's spoken so highly of his experience in Rochester, and I don't think it's a stretch to say he went down there and dominated. His numbers were towards the top of the league while he was there. So maybe those game repetitions, made him a better goaltender. I think every experience you have at that age probably does make you better. But in terms of who he is, he's a confident kid who I think, draws confidence from the people around him because of the way he carries himself. So really, really great start to his season.
I know we asked on social media, which was a great feature, who asked Bob Dylan to go to the game? And some said it probably was Levi. I don't believe Levi was that guy. Do you have an idea? Was it Tage? I feel like Tage had the guilty smile when he was asked. And like, Tage knows good music. I think he would know who Bob Dylan is, would recognize him, and would ask him to come to a game.
I truly don't know. Watching that video, it seemed to be the conclusion that was drawn that it was Tage. Like you said, though, he's a music guy. You'd think you probably know. That said, you're in an elevator. you know, who knows? It doesn't even mean you don't know who it is. You could be in an elevator full of people and not even realize. But I can confirm that it was no member of the staff. We all wish that we had met Bob Dylan, and it was not any of us.
Jordan, thank you. Enjoy the continuation of this trip, which, of course, culminates in Chicago on Saturday. We'll see you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. See you.
Jordan LaBarber from Sabres.com. We've got lots to get through still here on Sabres Live. Stay with us.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres Jackets tonight in Columbus. Amherst have the Marlies twice this weekend, home at Blue Cross tomorrow, in Toronto on Saturday. Head coach Michael Leone is going to join us on Sabres Live tomorrow. And there are 11 games in total in the NHL tonight. And big news from earlier today, while this show was unfolding, Jeremy Swayman became just like Linus Ullmark. Sorry, Jake Oettinger became just like Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman.
Yes. I didn't even like
you didn't even flinch
didn't
on that.
Flinch because they all the same. This is not the Spider-Man one on one pointing the finger. This is the three of them pointing the finger at all of them. But the big Spider-Man is Jeremy Swayman that set the market at 8.25. Ullmark gets a 4-year deal at 8.25, and now Oettinger goes exactly like Swayman, 8 years for $66 million.
But gets more take home.
Dallas, Texas, not the same tax bracket as Massachusetts. So, yes, he gets to take a little bit more home. But, look, this is well-deserved. Oettinger was not great last year. He had some moments. He was really, really good 2 years ago. And, obviously, a good start of the season. And I would think that, you know, in 2 years from now, we could be talking about Oettinger being one of the top goalie in the league with Igor Shesterkin. And Shesterkin's going to be making 11.5 plus. So it's good to sign him at 8.25 right now.
Boston, speaking of Swayman, although he didn't play, were able to secure a victory again at the expense of the Colorado Avalanche, who remain winless. That was one of the talking points from last night. The annoyance, because you know I have many of them, is the fact that Cole Koepke scored again. So this is really starting to frustrate me here in the month of October. Again, if you missed it, I'd forgotten that he signed with Boston back in July.
And that that fourth line of Boston is 8 goals for, 0 goals against so far in the season.
That's Why do you incredible. Do this to me? You know I'm trying to get healthier and recover, and now you're just draining me mentally to the point where I don't want to work with you tonight. And that's actually not true, but it's kind of true because so this is a true story. Of what happened to the Mets last night, Howard Simon reached out to our broadcast department and said, I can't handle watching this team anymore. Can I host the Sabres pregame tonight? And you know what? I thought, well, if Howard is able to like get enough little freelance gigs right now, he probably doesn't have to tap into Social Security just yet. So I'm looking at this as like a favor that we're doing for Howard because he had such a good time working with you last year. He's going to be hosting tonight.
Yeah, Howard will be in studio tonight as the Buffalo Sabres take on the Blue Jackets. And I heard Howard on the morning show picking the Bills after the Bills win on Monday night. So he was pretty excited. There was also a stat that Sneaky Joe threw at Howard saying, hey, you know that in Major League playoffs, a team that got basically shut out by 9 runs or more in game one all came back to win the series, right? And the Mets lost 9-0. Well, they came back to win game two just to lose a big one last night again. And somebody put a snake in the Dodgers dugout. I don't like it because I hate snakes. So I wouldn't like that. But and also Howard mentioned that he may have already called dibs on some World Series tickets if the Mets make it to the World Series.
Well, now they won't,
Well, now they won't, but
you can't plan that far ahead. Got to be spontaneous in the moment, man.
But you know what? That's probably why he's trying to pick up freelance jobs to be able to, you know, he wants to keep cheering for the Mets for many years to come.
What was the more controversial or impactful foul ball for Ohtani? The one that was ruled a home run or the one that caused him a little bit of pain?
Well, The one that caused a little bit of pain, I didn't think that when you hit yourself with a foul ball like that, that you could crush one in the same day the way that he did. Like, I'd be killed over. I'd be hurting. I'd be like, I can't. Make me bunt. Make me bunt. That's all I can do. He bunted that one 450 feet
man,
away.
Oh, man. Well, still no ruling. Still no official word as to whether it was fair or foul. The Mets, of course, claim that it was foul, but whatever.
It was ruled fair, so we got to think fair. That it's fair. So that's the way it goes. But, man,
Also from last night in the NHL, a ninth consecutive home opener win for the Ducks in Anaheim. And if you didn't stay up late to see their win against Utah, this was the spectacular closing goal.
Yeah.
By Leo Carlson, who had himself a game. And remember, there was a lot of talk around Carlson last year, right? And then injury and just like managing him in his first year. So he's probably, of all the Ducks young talent, Zegras included, he might be the guy to absolutely pay attention to on a nightly basis.
Yeah, Leo Carlson is good. And that crew in Anaheim, I love their orange helmet and pants. I think it looks sharp, even with the white jerseys. And yeah, they battle back, right, to beat Utah. And that was nice. Now, Utah has played five games.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them have gone to OT. So yep. It's like they love to go to the extra, get the extra point, which the Sabres did last night. And it's something that we got to think of positive, right? Moving forward, play Columbus tonight, play Chicago. You got the point. In seasons past, maybe you would have got zero, not being able to come back after being down 4-3.
Yes, and it'll be the fourth straight time facing Columbus where they will see Tarasov in goal. We are expecting Levi for the Sabres, and of course, all the lineup news in your pregame tonight with Howard and Marty here on MSG. We'll see you then.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.